Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of February 7th. This week we were joined by Father Daniel Grudy of the University of Notre Dame, a theologian who has an article in the current issue called A Theology of Migration. I spoke to Father Grudy by phone.
Well, maybe we can just begin by perhaps you could describe what you mean by a border theologian.
Well, border theologian for me is just someone who's been working along different geographical borders and different parts of this country as well as different parts of Europe and other parts of the world in the Caribbean, Latin America. But for many years, actually, I had been doing theological reflection while working with migrants. So initially, it was just a context for where I was doing my work. But over time, I began to see that migration is a theological concept as well. So I began to see borders and migration as sort of a rich field in which to reflect on who we are before God.
In your article, you recount an anecdote for how you kind of came to this revelation when you were early on in your studies. Perhaps you could share that story.
Well, there were a couple of instances. There was a kind of a more general trend that started really with an interest in spirituality. So it was really my interest in spirituality that got me into the issue of social justice, not the other way around. I think people can come about it in different ways. But for me, I really was primarily interested in spirituality. I had done the 30-day retreat early on with Drew Christensen. And so for me, that gave me a frame and a reference point for trying to understand what it meant to live a faith that does justice. But what happened early on was I was doing graduate studies in California, and I can remember one morning I woke up, and on the other side of the room from where I slept, there was a guy who had literally spent the night and kind of camped out, literally only about 12 inches from where I slept. And so it was disturbing on one level, but it was also challenging because it really led me to reflect on saying, what does theology mean from this person's perspective? So that began sort of a whole process of going to the other side of the wall, listening to narratives of people who live on the margins of society, and trying to reflect theologically out of those narratives.
So when you talk about those narratives, what did you do? Were you doing actual interviews with some of these folks?
What it was for me was Gandhi talks about doing experiments in truth, and so I really didn't have an exact game plan. It was a lot of trial and error, but I would go into Grand Central Station, and I would sit down, have a cup of coffee with folks who were prostitutes or people who were homeless folks living in the streets there. Also, I'd go out into migrant camps, and I would go sort of different places where people were living and just had a conversation with them. And it was mostly just an inquiry about really what was going on in their lives, what they learned and observed about people from that context, and really if and when they thought about God, what did they think?
Were you surprised by some of their responses?
I was, very much. I think I was continually surprised, and I was enlightened. I mean, it was more than just going out to do something for them. It was really kind of a shared journey together and shared conversation. So I was very much surprised by often insights, penetrating insights into how they perceived reality, how they perceived people. Sometimes I would ask them, you know, if they could preach to a congregation on Sunday, what would they say? You know, if they could speak, say, in the migrants' case, if they could speak to the presidents of the United States or of Mexico, what would they want to communicate? And, you know, finally I would come to the point of saying, if you could speak to God face to face, what would you say?
You share in your article that often you were surprised at the fact that they didn't necessarily blame other people for their circumstances or blame God for their circumstances. It was more they attribute to other factors.
Yeah, I think initially I expected people to really complain and blame a lot more than they did. I think one of the things that came out that surprised me consistently is amidst some of the most godless of circumstances that they found the strength to praise God and to thank God for many of the blessings that they had. I can remember one woman who I had met coming across the border of Mexico, and she had talked about coming from Guatemala on the train for 10 days. She had talked about trying to cross over three times, about a coyote smuggler stealing all of the money that she had brought with her, and another trying to rape her. And after a whole litany of abuses that she had gone through, the third time she said that she collapsed in the desert and she almost died there. And so when I asked her, you know, a number of questions leading up to that one about how would you speak to God face to face, you know, initially she said to me, look, and she says, I'm speaking with God all the time. She said, but the first thing I would say to him is thank you for having been so good to me.
Wow. Now, when you took these interviews back and tried to kind of do some theology, what were the themes you found in, you know, theological resources and in Scripture that you found particularly applicable to these situations?
Well, one of the hard things is that, you know, sorting through the themes, there's a lot of intuitive insight. And, you know, when we're kind of in theological conversation in more formal settings, it comes out a bit more cleanly. The hard part was kind of trying to distill out of these narratives sort of those different themes. So it was kind of wading my way through a lot of information and through a lot of stories, a lot of very good stories. But I think some of the ones that occurred to me was, one, the gratuity of God, and just sense of the ability to be grateful even for the gift of life, and particularly for the gift of life. People really kind of had a capacity to really just give thanks for the gifts that they received. And part of that was recognizing that they were not, that life had been given them as a gift, that in some senses it wasn't something that was earned or something that was accomplished. It wasn't about, you know, going out and acquiring status or possessions, but it was a sense of saying that everything we have from God is a gift. And so really, how do we live that in response and gratitude? The other was just the ability to see God suffering with them. And so a number of migrants really comment on the fact that they really did sense tangibly God's presence with them. Sometimes that would come through the help of other people, quite tangibly. People that would give them food when they were on trains, people that would reach out to them. But also sort of the injustices that they experience. I mean, a common denominator is just sort of being treated like you're a dog or being treated like you're just the lowest form of life on earth. When I would ask migrants what's the hardest thing they go through, one of the amazing things that they said, it wasn't generally the physical difficulties that they went through, but it was the indignities when they were just treated like they were the lowest form of life on earth. And they said often that was the hardest part about being a migrant.
You mentioned in your article you have studied migrants between various countries, Malta and Libya, Slovakia and Ukraine. But the one that sits home here most is Mexico and the United States. Given the political situation and kind of the charged nature of the topic of immigration, what do you think your studies and your investigations can kind of offer to U.S. Catholics today?
One of the most important things that we do is to bring out the human face of the migrant. And I think if you don't get that piece right, it's hard to get anything else right. And if they are just disposable labor to other people, if they can just simply cross deserts and die without seemingly, you know, any really conscience or qualms, if they feel like they've just broken the law and that's the end of the discussion, you know, I think it's a sad commentary on who we are. The thing that surprises me consistently is when you really get to listen to the story of these folks. They're crossing borders to send money back home to feed their families. They're crossing borders because they don't have medication and their relatives need them. And then you look at it and you say, well, these are the people that we want to apprehend. These are the people we want to throw in detention centers. These are people that are often thrown into jail. And so I think that the contradiction that I'm often confronted with is how we're criminalizing those who are hardworking people looking for jobs, even though, and, you know, the Border Patrol would say this, 2% of the people are involved in serious criminal activity. So that's where the targeted enforcement needs to be addressed, and that's really where the problems are. But when we really sort of put people to task for just looking for work, and then I think there's something kind of more seriously wrong with our global economy in general. And if we don't see the human face of the migrant, then really we can't really arrive at a more peaceful and just society.
You have done, in addition to your written work, you've produced some documentaries about some of this. Do you find that's well suited to the kind of theology you're doing?
Well, I think, you know, as I've often said, that, you know, I often work in the spoken word, in the written word, and also in the visual word. And all of that, I think, is trying to give an expression to the incarnate word. So it really is a form of evangelization, but it is, because an evangelization tries to really give a new imagination about what it means to be human before God. And so it's very important, I think, because we were, you know, watching some of these documentaries as well as looking at some of the news commentaries from folks like Lou Dobbs and others, and it just said there's another story that needs to be told. And so the story of migration is being told, but it's just being told badly. And in many ways, what's important for U.S. Catholics and for others is to really go into these villages and to listen to these folks. I had been working in some of the villages and towns throughout Mexico, and that gave me really insight into really what they were going through. When you see a lot of villages that are just women and children, and when you see a lot of folks that just really are having trouble making ends meet, and that you see there are factors that are pushing them to migrate, and there are also factors that are pulling us to migrate. And I think, you know, I didn't get into this into the article, but one very important kind of factual information I think is important for U.S. Catholics and others is that 19% of the world lives on less than a dollar a day. 48% lives on less than $2 a day. 75% lives on less than $10 a day. 95% lives on less than $50 a day. And the top 1% of the world has as much as the poorest 57% of the world. and the three richest individuals in the world have as much as the poorest 48 nations. So when we look at those statistics, one of the things that it confronts us with is that migration is not a problem in itself, but it's a symptom of deeper imbalances that push people to migrate.
How has your work been received by your colleagues within the Theological Academy? Is it seen as unorthodox by some?
No, it's not necessarily seen as unorthodox, but it is seen as different. And so I think what it is trying to do is to connect with some of the more traditional themes, not the least of which would be themes about Exodus and exile and return and incarnation and mission and all of those. So it really is not necessarily new, but it is maybe a new articulation of traditional themes. So I think a lot of theologians initially probably wouldn't know where to categorize it at first. But, you know, I would really see it coming within the larger frame of a spirituality and of a faith that does justice. And so I think in that sense it's new, but also I think people recognize that it's responding to some very real needs in the church today, and therefore there's some need for sustained reflection on these issues.
Are there other younger theologians working on this now have seen this as kind of an area of potential study?
I think that there are increasingly some folks I know of, people in Europe who are beginning to work on these themes. I know that there's some doctoral students right now who are trying to look at different dimensions of this. I think there's immigration is a topic that really touches upon every discipline, I mean, almost every sector of life. And as well within theology, it's something that can be reflected on from many, many different perspectives, from a liturgical perspective to an ethical perspective to an ecclesiological perspective. So I think within those different areas, there are, you know, and because of the pastoral needs of the church right now, increasingly we're seeing this come up, you know, as a theological topic.
Now, we've talked mostly about migrants between Mexico and the United States, but you have studied other migrants. Are there any unique issues that are faced, for example, migrants between Spain and Mexico or Malta and Libya?
Right. Sometimes within the United States, we have what's called soft migration, and by that, it's not necessarily refers to that being easier or more difficult, but it's the fact that you have people coming from what is traditionally considered a Christian Catholic country coming into what is a Christian nation like the United States. So in terms of coming into the churches, there's sort of a bit more of, I would say not always, but there is at least sort of a welcoming experience. But you have in Europe what's known as hard migration, whereas you have traditionally Islamic immigrants particularly coming into, say, nations like Italy or Spain, which have been predominated by Catholicism. So you have in some of these villages places that have for 1,700 years been marked by Christianity. Suddenly now they're building mosques and they have bigger families. There's negative population growth within Europe, and there's larger families coming from when these Islamic populations. So that's created not just cultural conflict, but also religious conflict. And so I think the dynamics are even more complicated in Europe than they are in the United States.
Finally, what does it mean to understand God as a migrant God?
Well, I think it really is a way of understanding the incarnation of God leaving his homeland, if we can speak about that in a figurative way, entering into the sinful territory of our broken existence, and there laying down his life on a cross and then calling us into a migration back to our homeland and to restore humanity. And so I think it does give us a way of seeing God coming to us, but we also see this going on in the scriptures, that Jesus not only comes to us as a migrant in the incarnation, but certainly in Matthew's gospel, he enters into the world amidst a drama of documentation, and then very quickly at the hands of a crazed king, he and his family are thrust into the desert and become political refugees. So migrants and refugees do read their own story through the lens of God being a migrant, but I think for us, it does give us maybe another frame from which to understand God in movement, but it also, as we look at the scriptures, we look at the call of Abraham, the Exodus, exile, return, mission. All these themes are marked by movement. And so the real alien is not someone who is moving, and it's not someone who doesn't have political documentation, but it really is someone who's so disconnected themselves from other people and from the stranger need that they can't see in the immigrant a mirror of themselves, as well as a reflection of Christ and a way of looking at the human journey before God.
Well, Father Dan Grudy, we want to thank you for taking a few minutes to describe your work to us.
Great. Thank you very much, Tim.
We want to thank you for joining us for the America Magazine podcast. Reminder, you can go online this week where we have a review of the film The Company Men from Harry Forbes. We also have a series of short profiles of young theologians, promising young theologians, offered by Father Paul Crowley. A reminder that you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.